Welcome to the WFNY Cornercast, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at the Cleveland Guardians baseball team and farm system. Presented to you by the WaitingForNextYear.com network of podcasts. Here are Gerbs, Mitch, and Ethan.
Hello and welcome to the WFNY Cornercast, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network in Waiting for Next Year community. You'll be hearing this tomorrow morning, August 12th. I am your host, Joe Gerbs-Gerberry, alongside Ethan. Farmer Ethan, today is like a national holiday for you, I think, right? It's the Field of Dreams game. It's a game that's literally being played in a cornfield. Did you watch at all any of the Field of Dreams game? Or were you tending your own crops?
I wish I could say that I did. Because despite the moniker, and all joking aside, due to an incident in my past that we shall not discuss, I'm not allowed legally within 500 feet of a cornfield.
Who watches that? Who patrols that? Do you have a chip in you that tells like some sort of federal authority when you get close to a cornfield? Or is this
like house arrest with like an ankle monitor that has like, right, corn proximity?
There's like a electroshock that comes on you whenever you get near and near a corn.
Yeah.
Okay. That works. I don't know if you saw it or not. They had Ken Griffey juniors and seniors play catch, the have a catch. And I saw it on Twitter. I did not actually watch the game. But I saw the video on Twitter, and as they went to go have a catch, the very first throw from junior to senior, he dropped. So I was like, this is fitting. This is great. But he's also like easily in his 60s by now. So time will catch us all, I'm sure. So
I did at least catch the opening festivities and seeing the players walk out of the corn. That is entertaining. It is fun. I do like it. Baseball should do more things like this. I love the Little League Classic game. Cleveland was a part of that last year.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan, just due to limited access and based on where I was earlier this evening, all I saw of the game was the Cubs putting three up on the Reds and Drew Smyly plucking the first guy he faced.
Cool. Yeah, that'll do it. But yeah. Well, you know, I mean, when you have no fences and it's literally just cornfield, it's not that hard to put it over the fence, quote unquote. So.
But yeah, I wonder how that works. Does like if it just goes into the corn on the fly, does it count?
I think so. I've always figured that's what it was. I don't think you're seeing like Nick Senzel like running into the field with the ball in his hand, like holding up his glove. Like
there's some kind of railing in left field from when I was looking at it, but like right field is obviously just straight corn. So if a ball goes in there on the fly, like I have to assume that's gone. They play like Wrigley Ivy rules.
Well, I don't know about like ground rule doubles. I'm thinking like just on the fly, like the corn is the like line of demarcation. I don't know about like it bouncing and hitting it, like because obviously there's no fence there, so I would think it would just be a ground rule double if it hits the ground and bounces in.
I think this would be a great time to consult the Wooded Dong guy for our. At least our fly ball questions.
We'll ask. I will determine what has happened here, and I will put it in the podcast notes tonight. So that's my homework for this evening. So
we need corn rules, Joe. Corn rules.
Corn rules for the podcast. Your homework is to go to breakingtea.com/WFNY and check out all of the Guardians gear that they have on the website. We bring it up all the time. Tons of great shirts on the site. Get some ready to support your first place guards. First place all to themselves, your Cleveland Guardians, 1.5 games up on the Minnesota Twins, youngest team in the league. First place. Ethan, how do you feel about the team right now? On August 11th, there was a game that we got to see earlier today, got to extra innings for a win in extras to sweep the Tigers. But how are you feeling about your guards today?
after today's game, I feel physically old. It was so stressful. I could feel myself aging in the 9th and 10th inning of this game. But overall, I mean, I feel absolutely fantastic. The team's playing good baseball. The starting rotation has come around. They're playing, or they're pitching absolutely out of their mind right now. And that's something that this team has really needed, is the pitching to come together. But the last time through the rotation, which extends into the latter two games of that Astros series over the weekend, Guardians pitchers chipped in 30 and a third innings pitched, 16 hits, just 3 earned runs, all of them allowed by Savali and Plesac during the two games that they pitched against Detroit, walked just 4 batters and struck out 31. And that includes 3 scoreless starts from Cal Quantrill, Shane Bieber, and Tristan McKenzie. That'll play.
Yeah, that's those are some nice stats. And I was slowly nodding my head as you were saying that the runs were given up by Zach Plesac and Aaron Civale, as I'm sure we'll get into tonight, as we are actually going to play a kind of a game. There wasn't as you said, for reasons that are out of our control, both of us have been a little bit busy, and so we haven't been able to watch as much games as we'd like. So rather than tell you a whole bunch of updates on players, we thought we would play a new game that I thought up, and Ethan called it Heat Check. I titled it Take Him or Leave Him, but we'll get into our game here in a second. I did want to mention just news and notes. The Guardians are heading out to Toronto for a weekend series. With the Toronto series, that always brings up the vaccination status of certain players. And it's Guardians actually only losing a player. It is not a Royal situation where there is multiple and myriad people that are off the roster. But James Karinczak will not be able to play against the Blue Jays. Cleveland has already decided they are going to call up Peyton Battenfield. So if he pitches over the weekend, this will be the 14th rookie that is getting his major league debut in a Guardians uniform this season. So it's going to be interesting to see if that actually does happen, and interesting to see where that number ends up totaling for Cleveland at the end of the year. But just a 3-game series. I don't know when Battenfield pitched last. I know he's a starter by trade. It's very possible they will use him in a long relief role. But what are your thoughts on this Toronto series that's coming up this weekend?
So the Blue Jays fired their manager, which I still contend was a move that didn't make a ton of sense to me. But at the same time, it's hard to argue with people internally saying that he'd lost the locker room and things weren't going their way, and it's hard to argue with the performance they've had since. Toronto's a different team than when Cleveland swept them early in the year, so it's not going to be an easy series, but if the pitching is doing what it's doing north of the border as it has the last week, I'll take Cleveland in the series to at least get 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I don't see why 2 out of 3 can't be possible. There's no the team is playing very well right now, and Toronto isn't what they were supposed to be, which is why the manager got fired. And I definitely can see a world where it can happen, and I'm not predicting anything. I would like to have a 2 out of 3, but getting a series win would be pretty big for this club in aspects of bringing some legitimacy to the first placeness, just because the AL Central is so god awful. But it would allow them to have a little bit more of like, see, we are good. So
not only do you get some validation as to leading the division, and we can debate the mixed stats about Cleveland's record against teams currently above 500 and whatnot. I know that's been a hot button issue in our own Discord, but it would also be nice that worst case scenario down the stretch, you pocket six games out of seven on the season against wild card one Toronto.
Right.
In case for whatever reason you do fall out of the division lead. And it's nice to have those wins. And you've got Baltimore coming up in a couple of weeks too. So having those season series wins in your back pocket is also a great thing.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those, it sounds stupid, but it's nice to win the games, you know. So let's, speaking of games, let's get to our take 'em or leave 'em game. And Ethan and I were talking that we can look back on this and at the end of the year and just kind of compare notes to where we were at the start of August, see where we are at the end of the season. But here are my rules. You guys can play along as you listen. Rules of my game that I just created and made myself as my phone falls off my little camera stand. You have, you can take this player onto next year's roster, or you can leave him here in 2022. You have to keep 20 players, or you have to have a plan to fill the other six spots on your 26-man roster. If you are leaving players off of the roster, you have to declare what you are going to do with them. If you're going to trade them away, non-tender them, or if you're going to send them back down to the minors. The only other rule that I have, Jose Ramirez is the only automatic entry because reasons. It's Jose Ramirez. He should absolutely be the automatic entry. So, where do you want to start? I have the list of hitters and pitchers. I have them. I'm almost certain I have all 26 here for you. Where do you want to start? Do you want me to just go down the list and say where they are, and we can talk about them individually, or do you have a set that you have pretty much already moved over?
No, let's just go down the list. I think we can make it a stop by stop talking point idea here.
Okay. So I tried to go as much around the diamond as I could. So I have Josh Naylor at first. For me, he's a keep. I think he's established himself this year as a very clutch bat. I think he is. I don't know that he. I think they want to keep the DH open going forward. I think the comments from Zach Meisel in some of his articles about Fran Mill that the coaching staff likes having the rotating DH. It's a feature, not a bug, of having the roster. So I think he'll play first base more than he'll DH, which is still pretty decent. But I think he's established himself as a major league hitter, someone who is as important in the locker room as he is in the lineup. And I think he's a guy that you have to pencil in for 2023.
Yeah, he's a no-brainer keeper in my mind. I think we have differing ideas of what we would like to see happen with Naylor. As far as short-term goes and what happened in 2023, I'm absolutely keeping him. That being said, I don't think there's a better first base option, as much as I would like to see him, as his power continues to develop, eventually switch into that DH role. Now, that's not saying that he can't improve his defense, but it's been an adventure at first, not as bad as some other players as we've highlighted. He's got some good stretch. He can at least catch the ball, but you know, it's not perfect. He's still developing over there. And some of it may even be side effects from his ankle injury. That's very obvious. He's still nursing some days as he's running the bases, but yeah, he's a clutch bat. There's some power still to be unlocked there. He's another one of Cleveland's ideal, hardly chases anything, doesn't strike out a whole lot. You'd like to see the walks come up too, but yeah, as far as this roster is concerned, Josh Naylor has to stay.
Yeah, I agree. So mark one down on the count. Next up, second base. This is obvious. This is as obvious a accept as anybody, almost in the automaticness. Andrés Giménez, absolutely is going to, be good, it's kept. to the point of looking at the future, I like how Mitch put it early on. If Andres is your floor, then that's a really great floor to have at the middle infield spot. So he was an all-star this year. He started the all-star game. He got was able to do it, and he's as good as advertised and has made the Lindor trade look like, not a steal, but look like a win for Cleveland so far.
I think he's been better than advertised. Bias fully on display. I was upset when the Lindor trade happened. Lindor was my favorite player, but that's the life of a small market ball club. I've been through this time and time again. I went to a game this past Saturday, a Wardcliffe Lee jersey. He was my favorite player at one point in time. Traded him too. It's just the game that you have to play. But I didn't know much about Jimenez when he came over in that deal. And reading back and looking at it now, I really think he's exceeded what he was promised to be, especially since he already had some major league experience with the Mets before he joined Cleveland. It's been a revelation, to be completely honest. And he's still, again, he's another guy who's developing his power, but this season he's been a completely different player at the plate. And he just has such good command of the strike zone. He rarely swings and misses. He still chases the high heater a little bit, but the walks are going to come with his approach. The power's starting to be there. And let's not forget, he's 23 and started the All-Star game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in this lineup, I am okay with not having as much. It's hard to find power in this lineup, but I also think that he's a guy that can develop into it in a Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor kind of a way. The contact is there. The eye is there. And he's able to command the strike zone almost as well as like a pitcher does. But yeah, I think the power will come with Jimenez as he gets a little bit older, but as good a floor as there is for building the roster. So, all right, next one on the list, going around the horn, Ahmed Rosario. We might have a little bit of fight on this one. So why don't you take it first?
We have reached our first leave them behind of this list. And this is nothing against Ahmed, and I will give credit where credit's due. He has been excellent to start the second half of the season. I can't take that away from him. And I know there's a lot of talk out there about how his defense is largely improved, but largely is a bit of an exaggeration. He's still barely above replacement level at defense. He made two errors in this series against Detroit, and it's not perfect. But you know, he's continuing to hit for average. He's still 2.5 F4 player. There's not a lot to dislike about him other than the fact that he just doesn't hit for any sort of power. He doesn't walk as much as you would like, but he hits line drives and he sprints like crazy. But the same argument that we've applied for Andres Jimenez, if Andres is your floor, you're in a great spot. If Ahmed is your floor, that's a bit lower. And I really do think that some of the crop of prospects coming up can replicate to a degree Rosario's offensive numbers while being exponentially better defensively. But leaving Rosario behind also means moving Andres back to his natural shortstop position and letting a player who is taking reps at second base in the minors, like Brian Rocchio, come up, who is, by the way, a line drive four average hitter, like Ahmed, but plays potentially gold glove defense. He has the nickname the Professor for a reason. So,
ooh, I love a good nickname when they make it. I like making the nicknames myself, but I'm good with calling Rocchio the Professor as he comes.
Brian Rocchio, nice. The Professor. That is dubbed by a Cleveland organization coach. That one can stay. But I do think that we're going to throw away things like clubhouse presence. I know Rosario has a lovely reputation right now in the clubhouse, and he's been very much a catalyst for what this team is doing right now. But just from a play standpoint, I think this healthy, healthy farm system can replicate what he's doing and eclipse it sooner rather than later. Because what does this team do? They get younger and they get cheaper. And Rosario's next in line for that casualty.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
These are good points. I am turning into the curmudgeon of the Discord. I will never be able to fully take Bodie out of that role. I started writing a... let's extend Ahmed Rosario piece last night when I saw the tweet that came through after Will Benson hit his got his first hit that Ahmed and JRAM will take the ball. Mind you, the fact that they've had so many players that have had their first major league hit this year is one thing, but they've been taking the ball and feigning as though they are throwing it into the stands to try to keep it away from the authenticator. It just won my little untangible heart. You know, the stuff you can't put, the unquantifiable things. So I did want to mention though, and I'll say it on the pod so I don't have to actually finish out the article, despite the fact that I probably should. Ahmed has done things to his offensive game that if they hold true to next year, if not in Cleveland, will make someone very happy. He has upgraded his, he was never much of a free swinger. His strikeout rate never got really, you know, exorbitantly high. He doesn't walk at all. But he didn't strike out nearly as bad as what major league players are, but he's down to 15% of the K rate this year, which is getting close to Steve Kwan, Jose Ramirez numbers. And in doing so, he has taken out, he's basically put all of his stats into contact rate, out of zone contact rate, and in zone contact rate, and improved all of those to a point where, you know, you can see the swing and miss is almost gone now. He's down to single-digit percentages on swing and miss rate. He was close, never got to 12, but close to like 12% swinging strike rate, down to 9.2, I think, this year. So it's a big drop for three percentage points, 2.5, whatever, dropping that stat in particular. But this goes to show he's making adjustments and growing his offensive capabilities. It's allowing him to stay in the top of the lineup of a right now playoff team. And I would like to keep him on the roster for these things, but I will agree with you that just by virtue of the organization, there are better days to come. With regards to his defense, and it's likely that the Brian Rocchio's or Tyler Freeman's maybe could do what he does on offense while providing an even better defense. So he will be the first one that we check off here. So what would you suggest? Obviously he is entering his arbitration 3 year. Are we trading Ahmed? Are we non-tendering him? I don't think he's I don't know his option status, but I don't imagine that he's going to be sent to the minors. He's either on this roster or off it. Is he in a different uniform for 2023?
I absolutely think you would trade him in this scenario. And I know leading up to the deadline, there was talk of, we know what Ahmed Rosario is. His trade value is not going anywhere. I think the foundation on that might be starting to shift slightly. I'm not saying Rosario fetches you any team's top prospect. You know, I think entering this season, if they moved Rosario, like we've long speculated that they would before he cemented himself as a clubhouse presence, you probably would have gotten some 19, 20, low A, high A kind of player. Right. That's a gamble for him with the time that he had left. I think now you might be able to flip him for maybe a reliable reliever with a year or two of control. You could get yourself another major league piece, but not anything that's going to be like a cornerstone franchise altering player, but somebody that's of use to you in your current build.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's, I don't think you're getting any kind of like 50 level, you know, on Fangraphs 50 player prospect back for Rosario, but a useful major league piece can definitely be had. So that's definitely out there. So, all right, moving around the horn, we already put Jose in, so he is in without a doubt, automatic entry. So that moves us out to the outfield. Stephen Kwan, there were people on sites who may have made mention of invoked the name Mercado when it comes to Stephen Kwan. I think you and I can both agree that it's kind of silly to sit here and watch Stephen Kwan play and have any kind of Oscar Mercado flashbacks.
That's an apples to oranges comparison. I mean, Oscar Mercado in 2019 alone, which is considerably his best season, and it's not even close, he might have swung and missed and struck out more times than Stephen Kwan might in the first 3 years of his career in just 2019, which was 115 games.
Right.
So think about that for a second.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. I cannot see this roster taking form, taking shape in 2023 and have Kwan not be on it. The only way that you are going into 2023 as a Cleveland Guardians organization without Stephen Kwan on the roster is if you have Juan Soto or, you know, like as some bigger name, Ryan Reynolds or something like that, that it's a much bigger bat than what Kwan is able to do. They made mention today that I think it was actually Andre that mentioned how Sandy's kind of been working with Sandy Alomar has been kind of working with him a little bit more on getting better jumps on the base paths. And I think that is one, I think power will develop. He had a mammoth home run today in today's game. He's just not a power hitter, which is okay. He's not a slap ball hitter either. He's definitely a middle ground, like line drive guy, but he's on base so much. And I think that if he is able to add a base stealing component to his game, that's like the last, you know, that's the cherry on top of what is an already really good player. And I think if he's able to do that, able to work that out, then he could be a 30 steals guy. He's on base often enough at the top of the lineup. So,
yeah, I'm with you there. He's really excelled in this leadoff spot. And it's something that I've wanted to see is the team send him more. He does a lot of like the half stutter step, kind of starts to go and then gets cold feet kind of
thing.
Yeah,
he gets ideas on the base path. He doesn't really ever finish through on them, but he gets ideas.
Hilariously enough, a few weeks ago against the White Sox, that actually turned into a pitcher panicking and throwing the ball away. But I don't think he does it on purpose. I think it's one of those things where he doubts himself and he gets a better jump than he realizes, but he freezes.
Yes.
So
anecdotally, I've seen him scamper back to a base off of a hit. I've seen him dive back to first when he maybe could have made it to second. But he just, oh no. And just runs back halfway there.
The sign was on and he panicked a little bit, but
right.
Yeah. I really think that's a level of his game that can exist. And even for Kwan, if developing more power just means getting higher EV on those line drives, that's more than fine. I really think you have a capable, everyday leadoff guy in Stephen Kwan for years to come.
For sure. This is his betting profile just fully lends itself to that. So, all right, next one, center field, Miles Straw. Going into the year, this would have been an automatic yes. There are some question marks now after that horrible couple months that he went through. I'm going to mark him as yes. Are you cool with marking Miles Straw as a yes?
You have to. I mean,
yeah.
His stretch, yes, it was bad, but unlike Franmil, he's rebounded and he's played really well out of the nine hole and has given Terry Francona his ideal. Yeah, I'm going to put a leadoff guy in the nine hole.
Yeah, his fake leadoff.
Yeah.
He enjoys that fake leadoff.
For two other reasons. A, you paid him $20 million over 4 years. And B, he plays plove defense. Even if it's 250 and has a down year for you, because you know that's still worth it in my mind.
Yeah. You invoked Franmil because they both went cold at the same time. Miles is able to is around one because, like you said, you paid him, so he's still there. But he provides defense. Franmil with a glove is shaky at best. That's being polite to Franmil. So I agree with Straw is a good add-on. So I'm judging time here and I'm looking at and I'm like, oh, we only have five guys so far. So but I know there will be some of these that we can kind of leave off. We're going to have conversations probably about the next two or three guys though. Oscar Gonzalez, OG, this is going to be a tough one because, and if you want to do Oscar Gonzalez, Nolan Jones together, we can talk about both of them at the same time, but Oscar is such a hard conversation to have right now because he is a guy that we've talked about we didn't think he was going to be anything and he's made himself have value. And I don't know that he's got long-term value. And so I almost want to say for sake of Nolan Jones and others, you kind of have to leave OG off, but it this one hurts if we do this.
Yeah, I don't envy the front office having to make this decision, but I think I'm right. It's only 40 games. Yes, he has defied expectations. He was even the hero today. He's hitting over 300. He's got 15 doubles. He struck out far less than we anticipated, but the home runs just haven't come around. And I frankly still have my doubts. I know I tweeted out earlier today that he continues to prove me wrong at the plate and that I am still immensely impressed, but I still think it is all just short term. I value Nolan Jones as a future chip, like a blue chip prospect to this organization, so much higher than I do Oscar. And that comes with the flexibility of I think he can adapt to play better right field defense than Oscar ever could. He's got a great arm out there, and he comes with the flexibility, and we've been calling for it for a while, to potentially chip in and play first base when Naylor needs days off. So I just, if you're going to ask me to pick, I'm taking Nolan over Oscar, and I'm going to send Oscar to some team looking for a DH. Because if this is what he's going to be, and he can add some power, maybe at the cost of some average, if he's a 120 WRC plus kind of guy like he is right now, somebody's going to take a bite at that for 5 years of team control, 6 years of team control.
Yeah, I think you are seeing Oscar Gonzalez become Franmil Reyes with San Diego. And it's a guy that is, you know, he played outfield. Franmil played outfield for San Diego, and they just had a roster crunch, and it wasn't, they wanted to get rid of him. And so, you know, Cleveland graciously took him on, and Oscar has the power to be that Franmil guy. We've seen it in the minors. We haven't not seen it in the majors, but he can definitely do it. And as you said, for the sake of it, if we're keeping Nolan Jones, you have to sacrifice Oscar. And I think anyone would do that at this point as well. So that's where we're at. We're leaving Oscar Gonzalez, trading him away, maybe telling him to work on adding some power to his game while not losing any contact ability in the minors. But that's where we're at. So last three of the position players before we get to the catchers. Owen Miller, Tyler Freeman. Well, yeah, I know. I wasn't even like, I almost was like, Owen Miller. Never mind. Owen Miller, just real quick. Great guy, maybe, possibly. I don't know. We haven't heard any like news reports about Owen Miller being a good guy, but I would take it that he was. But he's just not made for this roster. There are other guys that can do what he can. Play for sub in the first base, play in second. There's other guys that are there. So he definitely does not need to be hitting cleanup in this lineup, but I don't know why he does. But Owen Miller, sorry, your bags are packed and you're ready to go. So we will see you on the flippy flip. Tyler Freeman, Will Benson. Looking at it, we have three guys that are going right now in the hitters. We have to cut six of these out. So you have if you're cutting out Owen Miller, you have the possibility of keeping Tyler Freeman and Will Benson.
So I'm keeping Freeman, utility guy of the future for me right now. You know, he made an incredible play at third base today. I know there were questions about the arm, but I have no issues with it. And he's another one of those patented Cleveland elite kind of contact, really nice plate approach that's starting to prove itself in the majors kind of look to it. You know, could be everything we've ever wanted out of an Ernie Clement type, but it you know, it could depend. And consistent playing time could start to erode him, could rust those skills, but I'm absolutely keeping Freeman. I think I'm going to let Benson go, though.
Okay. You're going to be keeping more pitchers than what I think you're going to be keeping is probably where I'm at.
No, I'm going to hoard prospects like a dragon hoards gold. But
well, okay.
It is the book on Benson. Yes, he's a former first round pick of Cleveland. He's still a young guy. But the book on him is that he takes too long to adjust at each level that he gets to. He has yet to play first base at the majors for whatever reason. I don't understand that move in my mind. I mean, Owen played first base and back cleanup today, and I just cut him. So here we are. But I kept Nolan Jones because I think he's better than Oscar Gonzalez in right field. I'm definitely keeping Nolan Jones because I think he's better than Will Benson in right field. So with the outfield and George Valera still working in the minors, I'm going to let Benson walk.
See, personally, I would be keeping Benson because I trust him more in center field, which is weird to like think of him as a backup first baseman / center fielder. But having a that option there, I don't I guess Stephen Kwan would actually feasibly be your backup center fielder.
He came up through the minors playing center.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, and I mean, we're definitely, if we're not cutting, I'm good with cutting Will Benson. I had him leading up to the trade deadline. I had him cutting, I had him in basically every trade package I made. He was in, as just a like, hey, it's found money, basically, and let's see what we have. So, catchers on the roster: Austin Hedges, Luke Maley. Maley's gone. Hedges will be around next year to be with Bo Naylor, but Luke Maley is absolutely gone. So, glad you hit your first home run since 2019, dude. What took you so long? Why you gotta wait? Why you gotta make us wait for so long?
Hey man, at least it was a game that Cleveland won 1-0. So you can, it counted.
Very true. You can do it. You can do it more often, Luke. That's what I'm telling you. You can do it more often. You don't have to wait that long.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
So, all right. Out of the hitters, we are losing. We are leaving Ahmed Rosario, Oscar Gonzalez, Owen Miller, Will Benson, and Luke Maley. That's five guys that we are losing off the roster. So keeping 20, you have to keep 20. I guess we can keep more, but we're cutting at a pretty quick rate here. We may have to come back to some of these guys. So, all right, pitchers.
Let's do a rotation all at once.
I'm good with doing a rotation all at once. Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, Zach Plesac, Aaron Savale, Cal Quantrill. Out of there, three or four are you keeping?
I'm keeping three.
Keeping three.
And it's Shane Bieber. I know time is not long on his contract, but I think based on where this team is now, keeping him and trying to play up your current window that is opening and letting that contract expire is better than trying to find a better alternative on the trade market for him. Keeping Tristan McKenzie. He's right. Blossoming into an ace in front of our eyes.
Absolutely.
He's been lights out, especially against teams leading the American League. I called him Big Game Hunter after his game against Houston, which I don't think is incorrect. And I'm keeping Quantrill, your quintessential innings eater. Time and time again, we've doubted him at points in the year, but here he is plugging along. He's 8-5 with a respectable 3.8-something ERA. I don't understand his switch from 5 pitches to 2 this year, but for whatever reason, he's making it work. You know he's going to go get you 6 innings, give up maybe three runs, although he did do 6 shutout against Houston last week. I'm definitely out on Plesac and Savale. Plesac has never really found it to me, and he still gives up a ton of hard contact. And after this season, I've really seen enough of Aaron Savale. We joked at the beginning of the year he's the natural evolution of what Josh Tomlin could have been, but now he's just sunk fully into the worst of Josh Tomlin. And I can give a little bit of context on this one. Entering his start yesterday against the Tigers, with the bases empty, Aaron Savale was giving up a slash line of .284, .309, .433. Not great, but he had a 3.02 FIP and was striking out 25% of batters he faced, but only walking 3%. All right, you can live with that. But when Savale allows even a single base runner, doesn't have to be a man in scoring position. This is even with just a guy on first base. A single base runner, Savale's line spikes to opponents are hitting .313, .406, .566 slugging against him. He has a 6 FIP His K rate drops 8 points to 16.8%, and he walks 11% of the guys he faces. He's stranded a career low 59% of base runners he's allowed this year. His previous stat, his previous average entering this year was 79%. He's got to go. You can't just put that in the bullpen and hope it plays.
Yeah, I was gonna say your bullpen guy. With the rule changes to, you know, being a three batter minimum, it does change a little bit where you are having guys. You're having guys start innings more than you're having guys come into them. But so you're starting with a clean inning, which would, to your point, help out someone like Savale. But his stuff just doesn't play up the way that other guys' would. Plesac would make a more reasonable bullpen guy, as we've long talked about. But I agree with your points here. Yeah, I'm good with keeping Shane Bieber and Tristan and Cal Quantrill. Cal gets a bad rap, and I'm not here for it. I don't like the... You know, there is value in being an innings eater in 2022, 2023. And Cal is decent enough to be that guy. And that's where I'm at. And I will not let the slander go on. Will not. Won't have it. More guys that we know. We're moving with the rotation. Done with the rotation. So, again, that's Shane Bieber keeping, Tristan McKenzie keeping, Cal Quantrill keeping, Zach Plesac leaving, Aaron Svalle leaving. Bullpen guys, obviously, Emmanuel Classe, he's a keeper. Absolutely, no doubt. One, you paid him, two, he's just, I think, good. So, there's no question on that. I'm good with keeping, just naming names, Sam Henches currently. Being the lefty, I am good with keeping Nick Sandlin, who has been effective since being called back up. And I'm good with keeping Trevor Stephan, just trying to compartmentalize a little bit. He had a little bit of a rough go today, but he has been a steadying force in the bullpen this year as well. Nick Sandlin, like I said, has been good. Henches has been... I mean, we talk about it a lot. Miller-esque against not only just lefties. He's been good against righties as well. And I'm interested to see if they make him be more of a utilitarian role rather than just a, like, lefty guy. As I mentioned, with the bullpen rules, you don't have guys that are coming in the middle of innings anymore. So it's hard to bring him in for a lefty matchup. But he's been pitching very well out of the bullpen. And it's a guy that I enjoy seeing. So do you have a problem with Trevor Stephan, Nick Sandlin, Sam Henches being kept?
I'm iffy on Henches, but I'll let it go because there are other guys on this list that I want to let go to, and I don't want to make the list too long of who we're letting go. You know, I know the rules are that we have to find places for these guys if we don't keep them. And we didn't touch on it, but for the record, I would probably trade Plesac for whatever he's worth and probably non-tender Savale. You'd be hard-pressed to find something for him. But
yeah, I agree.
You know, in terms of who's currently in the bullpen, I'm getting rid of Brian Shaw, and I'm jettisoning him into the sun. I'm not going to try and find a trade partner. I'm done with that whole
thing. Just have him be the bullpen coach.
We tried that with Scott Atchison, but for whatever reason, they wouldn't even let Scott Atchison pitch this much.
Just let him be. Just literally take his like jersey off of him, hide his glove. If your idea is to have him be out there to be the wrangler of the children, then have him just hire him as a pigeon coach. Put him on the coaching staff.
I think at this point we have to give Terry Francona a lobotomy to see less of Brian Shaw. But Shaw's gone. I think I'm done with Eli Morgan. That's hard for me to say.
I agree.
You know, he throws a slider, but he doesn't use it enough. And without adding that third pitch and that extra plane of movement, if guys are sitting on two pitches and you've got a 50-50 chance of hitting one, he's going to keep getting roughed up like this. The league is adjusted and he's not. And that's the recipe of you got to go.
The command is not there for Morgan to be able to use the changeup in such a way that he can hide it. He's not throwing the fastball enough, or not throwing the changeup too little enough. Whatever the pitch mix is, it's not working. So the third pitch either needs to be added, and that's hard for a bullpen guy to do, or the velo needs to be amped up. Something is wrong with the mix, and it's just not. It doesn't seem like it's going to work out. So
yeah, but I'm also going to throw out Aniel De Los Santos. I don't think there's much of a future there. Maybe as a first guy out of the bullpen kind of thing, but for whatever reason, he keeps working himself into these leverage situations after not pitching in a week, and then the team deciding that the closer and the setup guy need a day off. It's not really appropriate usage, and if you aren't finding spaces for him to pitch in the sixth after Plesac throws 100 pitches in 5 2/3, then I don't know why or what you're doing with him. And then this is probably my biggest curveball of the night. No joke intended there, but I'm probably going to get rid of Karinchak too.
Oh, no. See, I know you. Knowing you, I fully expected him being gone. So it's not that much of a curveball.
I know a lot of people are really high on him right now.
It didn't stick with me the way that I thought it would.
Maybe not you, but to people listening, I know. I'm going to run my hands through my hair and contemplate that joke for a minute. But he's only pitched 15 innings this year. The numbers look great, but we saw what happened when they banned sticky stuff. And I don't know if that necessarily just comes back the way it has for him. Or, I mean, even if that was, as the team would like you to believe, just a confidence problem of him going through a rough stretch and him working his way back up. He's eventually going to get roughed up again. And then do you have to lose him for an entire season to get mentally right again?
Right.
So there's something there that I don't like and don't want the risk of, wow, we're in the thick of it in September and he's suspended or entirely lost it mentally.
For me, he's too good to be left off. He's pitching as good as anybody right now, and I guess it may just be me being a captive of the moment. I think somebody, I don't remember who said it, but they said, you know, really enjoy, because he's just a psycho. He looks like a psycho.
He is. He
acts like it, at least. And somebody on Twitter said, it's great seeing pitchers add the emotion and add the extra stuff into it. I don't want to ever talk to him. I don't, I would absolutely run into traffic to move to the other side of the road if I was walking down the street and saw him. So
To his credit, I think he's come a long way since his last demotion and coming back up this year, both as a team guy. His media presence has been really nice this year. He's done a really good job of talking up other guys in the locker room, not talking about himself, which is nice to see. It's growth, it's maturity for a 26-year-old pitcher. But at the same time, I think you capitalize on a 26-year-old reliever who intrigues probably a lot of teams, but probably thinks similarly to I do. I think you get what you can for him now and move on and let him be somebody else's problem.
Absolutely. I agree. That was a name that I left off. So let's look back. So pitching staff, we are keeping Shane Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Class A, Stefan, Sandlin, and Henches, leaving Plesac, Savale, Eli Morgan, Brian Shaw, De Los Santos, and Karinchak. So we are well under the 20 guys that I was planning on keeping. So I'm going to do an executive decision. We're gonna keep Oscar Gonzalez. We're just gonna let him stay. because he's a great dude and we want to keep him around. So that's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We have 4 extra guys that I was not planning on being gone, but we're good. So I made minor hitters of note that will probably end up being in the mix on 2023. Looking at Bo Naylor will absolutely be there. I think that was proven when Sean Murphy was not traded for this year. Seth Wanamaker actually asked in our Discord, what was the idea behind, not making any moves? And I mentioned it seems that the cost for Murphy was not what they wanted. It was obviously too high. Sean Cake Murphy. And with the organization is obviously, and within well good reason, very high on Bo Naylor. And so giving up the prospect package that it would have cost to get Murphy to be what is effectively a part-time player next year was just not worth it. And I absolutely agree. If that's how you view Bo Naylor and you think he's going to be that good, which I do, I agree. Let's not trade 2 of Espino, Valera, Brian Rocchio, the one and only Logan Allen. It's not worth it to trade 2 of those guys for somebody who's going to catch 4 out of 7 games a week, 3 out of 7 games. So yeah, Seth will be happy that we mentioned him. He asked that we mention him on the podcast. So we got him. So
yeah, no, I'm in lockstep with you on Bo Naylor. And considering we cut Naylor and kept Hedges and already had mentioned it earlier in the pod that Hedges is going to be here to teach Naylor how to handle a pitching staff and the finesse of framing and receiving and the specifics of that. We know that in theory he should be a significant and vast improvement over Hedges with a bat in his hands. But you can't ignore the value in keeping Hedges to be an on-field catching coach for Bo Naylor.
Yeah.
Which I think for any catching prospect is the harder thing to learn. Catchers who do both well, both hit and receive, are so, so rare. I mean, Adley Rutschman's a unicorn. Buster Posey was a unicorn. Yadier Molina, actually all 3 of the Molina brothers, unicorns.
Right.
But outside of that, you still have catchers like Salvador Perez and Wilson Contreras who are just offense guys. You have guys like Hedges who are just catchers. So it's rare to find that hybrid, and I think Bo has the potential to be maybe not a unicorn, but up there in like the next tier below of really, really solid catchers.
The Sean Murphys. The organization made a determination. Why are you going to trade prospects to get Sean Murphy when you have Sean Murphy at home? The Sean Murphy at home. So, that's what I'm calling Bo Naylor, Sean Murphy at home. I do think we are going to see Bo Naylor this year. I do think that they will bring him up and call and use him in September. Possibly catch a game here or there, but when rosters expand, I'm not at all surprised if Bo's here to simply just listen to Austin Hedges talk and discuss those things. A name I did not mention above and added very lately, Cody Morris. The team has to make a roster decision on him, I think tomorrow, actually, as to where he is going to be in his rehab. He needs added to the 40-man roster. I do think that he is going to be in the minors. I do not think he is going to be added to the big league roster. They seem to be trying to stretch him out and use him as a starter. He's pitching like bulk innings. So I don't know that there's a spot for him right now in the major league team, but he is a guy that I definitely do want to see on the roster for 2023. Maybe it's a fireman role, maybe supplanting Plesac or Savali in the rotation, but he's a guy that I definitely think is going to be there. So I blew him out, added him to the 20-man that we have going on, or the 26-man that we have going on here.
I think you'll probably see Cody this year. You're not going to see him now because at the time that we're recording this, he only has 5 1/3 innings pitched on the year. Maybe 10 if you include the Arizona League rehab starts. So he needs more time, but I wouldn't be surprised if even by the end of this year, maybe he replaces Eli Morgan for the fireman role, especially if Terry Francona continues to lose faith in him.
Right.
So
Cody Morris, for the record, Cody Morris has been so good in the minors this year. So good in the minors. I had to post it twice in my Discord because these people were not getting how good Cody Morris has been. He has faced 21 batters in the minors and his two in Columbus, and he has struck out 13 of those players. He has gotten 17 of the 21 players out.
He has a negative FIP. He has a negative FIP. Negative 0.07. But
yeah,
guys, it's 5 1/3 innings.
It's fine. That's the ASMR stuff you got going on right there.
Did you like that? Did that sound good?
You can record some videos later. All right. So I'm adding those two guys in for next year. So that's taking some people out. All right. Because we are getting close to our hour.
We can just go boom, boom, boom down this list if you want.
Okay. Valera.
Yes, for obvious reasons.
Yes, he's there for 2023, obviously. Yes. Gabriel Arias.
No, but
I guess they know.
You know, I want to keep him, but at the same time, he has no trade value and no value to you currently with the rest of the farm going up, so no.
Yeah. Brian Rocchio.
I'm the biggest Rocchio fan in this Discord, on this podcast. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're keeping him. I don't know that you see him in the majors next year. I think he's knocking, doing the Tyler Freeman thing right now. But in 2023, I don't know that he's actually going to be on the roster, though. Battenfield, we already see he's going to be here this year. Connor Pilkington, Connor with a K, Pilkey Smooth.
I'll take Battenfield over Pilkey Smooth.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I want to see what Battenfield does. I'm hoping that they use him this year or this weekend just as a quick option.
I bet he does get a start in Toronto because you're coming back to a doubleheader against the Tigers after that series. So I bet to get somebody an extra day's rest, he might steal a start up in Toronto.
Is it Quantrill should be on Sunday. Would be Bieber and McKenzie. I don't know they're bumping either one of those guys. You might see him though pitch longer after Quantrill on Sunday.
Or it could be entirely possible they throw out a Sean Friends Day at us so that you can get Quantrill in game one of that doubleheader.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. All right, last three big names. The one and only Logan Allen, Daniel Espino, and Xavier Young Curry. Zach Meisel mentioned in his piece today that Curry and Allen could see major league playing time this year, so they kind of have to be. And obviously, Espino, want to keep him in the organization, but I'm going to leave him as a red on this list just because I want to see him in the minors, see him go a full year being healthy.
Now, and to anybody listening who hears that point. Espino, yes, has had some injury problems this year, but a lot of the time that he's missed is mostly out of an abundance of caution.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't to say that he's got some massive injury problems. The team did this with Tristan, too, when he was really, really young. So,
Oh, yeah. When Tristan came up, like, he had almost, like, not pitched, like, in professional baseball for, like, a while. Like, it was a long time, and then all of a sudden he just made it.
Yeah, so don't fret over the season with Espino. He still absolutely has it. He's still super young. He actually doesn't even need to be added to the 40 this coming year, I don't believe. So I think you have another year before you even have to consider it.
But I'm not sure on that.
He's still a yes, yes, and yes in my book. And I will confirm Espino right now, actually, while we're talking about it. But yeah, I think you keep all three of those guys. I don't even think it's in question. Curry and Logan Allen, not your traditional blue chip kind of prospects, but have absolutely impressed the organization. Rule 5 eligible December of 23, so you don't even have to worry about him this year.
Look at you. You knew things that I didn't.
Yes, but
that's why I have you on a podcast.
Hey. But yeah, you keep all three of those guys without any question. The Cuyahoga pitching factory is alive and well. I actually saw it just before we sat down. The Guardians farm system, as of tonight, with a Doug Nikhazy start, have 9 pitchers who have eclipsed 100 strikeouts on the season.
Wow.
It is far and away the most pitchers of any farm system in baseball. And, oh, by the way, they have another guy starting in 2 days who's sitting at 98. They're going to have 10.
Sounds good to me. I'm good.
Yeah, the Cuyahoga pitching factory is alive and well.
Yeah. And it just goes to show that's why they didn't go out and acquire an arm, because they can have Cody Morris come up and pitch an inning or two in the playoffs, or, you know, Logan Allen, Curry, Battenfield, whoever come in and do those. They like having them come up and do some relief innings at first, get their feet wet and things like that. So we can definitely see this as an option going forward. But yeah, I am interested to see where we're at when September, see if there's guys that we grade out that are earn their ways back in. I do not think that it will be Owen Miller or Luke Maley, but there's always hope for Zach Plesac or Aaron Civale that they step up enough to where we're looking at them as pieces for next year. But the guys behind them are nipping at their heels, as we keep talking about. So, all right, Ethan, you got anything else for us tonight?
Go first place guards.
Go guards. The Guardians, again, are large statues that are right on a bridge in Cleveland. That is a joke that is only for our Discord. So if you listen, I love you. That's it. Have a good night, guys.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.